Okay, everybody, workday's over.
This is the best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Ovius and Giglio.
Speaking of hanging out and roster changes and not looking like what it used to be and various fluctuations in what you expected, that would be North Carolina's basketball roster. As the offseason churns, we've got the news that Matthew Hurt is joining DJ Stewart and Jalen Johnson as Duke players that are going pro. But this isn't that's not a new thing at Duke. Constant roster churn, right? Guys go pro, guys transfer, new guys come in. They've been doing this now for over 5 years at Duke since they've fully committed to the one and done, right? Started with that 2015 national championship. North Carolina has not been in that boat. Have they dealt with guys going pro earlier than they anticipated? Yes. Kobe White's the most recent example of that, the most impactful one. They've even had a guy like Cole Anthony come through who you understood was just going to be a one-year guy. But now North Carolina's dealing with all the other things that Duke has been dealing with. Transfers. Guys entering the NBA draft with just their toe in it, like in the case of Armando Bacot. And this has put Giglio Hubert Davis, the new coach at North Carolina, in a really tough spot. I preached patience when he was named the head coach at North Carolina. We talked to athletics director Bubba Cunningham last week, about this very topic. How do you project patience? His attitude, correct me if I'm wrong, was there's really no patience to project. They expect to compete. But when you look at the roster, you look at the coaching staff changes, I'm not quite sure they're there. This roster is going to be a small roster.
It's funny how we talk about Carolina, by the way.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
Like, we talk about Carolina differently than we do NC State, and differently than we do Duke.
Mm-hmm.
And that is because of their stability and because of the way that they've done things for what now? Basically since 1960?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you think about it, there's always been a progression with Carolina players, which is what makes this one unusual, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Walker Kessler was supposed to be the guy who went from, you know, a minor role as a freshman to an expanded role as a sophomore to a starring role as a junior. Like, that has been, for the lack of a better term, the Carolina way. And when he decided to leave, Roy Williams and Hubert Davis and all these other different coaches have talked about it. I think that was a signal that this is not going to be the same for Carolina. And then you start thinking about the players that they've lost. Armando Bacot, you mentioned, mm-hmm. is testing his NBA draft status. Well, and that's fine. The way they've changed the rules, you can do it as many times as you'd like. Now that he could certainly decide to come back. He was Carolina's best player last year, though.
Mm-hmm.
De'Ron Sharp was their best NBA prospect. He's going to be a first-round pick. He's gone. Garrison Brooks, given the extra year of eligibility, has decided he's in the portal. He's going to play somewhere else. That might be interesting, Joe, if they could now... Remember, Hubert Davis gave the full-court press to Walker Kessler. Maybe he gives the full-court press to bring Garrison Brooks back, given the dearth of talent now in the front court.
If you're Garrison Brooks, do you want to come back?
It's almost like it was 2 years ago, though. Because remember, when he had all of those opportunities, mm-hmm. that's how he ends up being the ACC preseason player of the year. Because even remember when Cole Anthony got hurt, he became the bus driver of that team.
He was, yeah.
Now, that was a team with a losing record, and I understand that.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting to me to see what their attitude is towards Garrison Brooks now.
Mm-hmm.
Because I find it funny, and I don't know about you, we saw this yesterday from our Virginia friends. Carolyn Darney had just tweeted about it and how Jaden Gardner is ranked as one of the top 40 transfers, right?
Oh, right, right.
Right. And I'm sitting there thinking to myself, Baylor just won the national title with a transfer from UNC Asheville and Presbyterian
mm-hmm.
playing major roles. Do you think anybody ranked them as
no.
five-star recruits or top 40 transfers when they left their respective schools? So that's the hope if you're Carolina. You've brought in Justin McCoy. He's a local kid. Averaged 3 points, 3 rebounds at Virginia. His role changed at Virginia. I don't know exactly what had happened there. He seemed to be in that line of speaking of the Carolina way. He seemed to be in that line to be another Anthony Gill type, another Mamadi Diakite type.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You know what I mean? Like that four for Tony Bennett who kind of sneaks up on you and then as a senior averages 10 points and 8 rebounds and you're like, huh, Virginia just keeps pumping out players like that. Would it surprise me if he turned into a better player than he showed at Virginia? No, but it's still a bit of a risk, Joe.
It's all of a risk, and it actually gets back to something we saw this past season. We weren't expecting transfers from Radford to be one of the best players in the ACC, too. You talked about teams that just won the national championship at Baylor and where those guys came from. This is something that our friend Chris Patola kept pointing out from ESPN anytime Louisville played, right, or Virginia Tech played. Like, oh, you know, these guys, these aren't your homegrown ACC talents. Right. That is the way of the future. But it's also important to know, too, when we talk about transfers, the typical attitude is, this is terrible for the game, et cetera, et cetera. It's actually not the case where there's not as many spots as these people think, right? The thing is, one, if a kid wants to better his position, go find playing time somewhere else, that's well within their rights. If somebody always finds places to transfer, that's a different issue altogether, right? If you find your home, you find your home. Eventually.
Right.
But like NC State has had guys who have come through on like their third go of transfers. And then what ends up happening with players like that? They usually don't stick around or they don't contribute. That's a separate conversation than, say, somebody like Walker Kessler. That's a different situation from somebody like Braxton Beverly deciding to use his freebie year to go home, essentially, right? What ends up happening, there's a recent study that I think is that's just now kind of getting out. And it's from the Journal of Issues in Intercollegiate Athletics. It was a paper written by a couple professors from the University of Cincinnati and Texas Tech University. And the headline is Switching Schools, Examining the Networks and On-Court Outcomes of NCAA Division I Men's Basketball Transfers. And what they found is counter to what the conventional wisdom is. When Dick Vitale goes on ESPN and rails against the transfer portal, and now this is terrible for the game. The upshot of this piece is that transfers occurred more frequently during coaching changes between non-Power 5 programs and between schools in the same state. In terms of performance and opportunity changes, transfer players averaged significantly more games, minutes, usage rates, and win shares in the seasons following a transfer. They also averaged more win shares and win shares per 40 minutes than freshmen in the same position. But it's again, I want to illustrate the bigger point. Transfers occurred more frequently during coaching changes between non-Power 5 schools. You want to talk to Lavelle Moten about transfers at Central, right? And between schools in the same state, being closer to home, you know, that kind of stuff. There's usually a rhyme or a reason to a transfer. And
it's almost always they want more playing time.
And they usually
almost
get
always.
It. And they usually get it in the grand scheme of things. So I'm not all that worried about the state of college basketball. What worries me, if I'm a fan of college basketball, I'm more worried about what the NBA is doing with the G League Select. Like, good coaches, somebody like a Kevin Ollie, who ends up taking a role with one of these G League Select organizations, right? That would concern me as a college basketball fan because the talent pool actually is going somewhere else. They're not using college as a way to get to the NBA. One other note about college. Matt Norlander at CBSSports.com had a list of proposed rules changes for college basketball. Again, these are not changes that are going to occur. These are just possible rules changes that they're going to be kicking around. You tell me how you feel about some of these, Julio. Widening the lane to 16 feet.
Sure.
More flow in the game. Reset team fouls at the 10-minute mark of each half and begin double bonus on the fifth team foul of each 10-minute segment. This would eliminate the 1-and-1 free throw. What does that sound like to you?
Just play 4 quarters.
Why is that so hard for college basketball
men's
to play 4
college
quarters?
College basketball is literally the only form of basketball played anywhere in the globe that plays in halves instead of quarters.
Limit the number of timeouts that may be called by any one team in the last 2 minutes of the second period or any overtime period or two.
I don't like that. I'll tip my cap to Roy Williams. If you save him, you can use him when you want to use him.
Mm-hmm. In the last 2 minutes of the second period or any overtime period, allow instant replay review of potential shot clock violations when the shot is unsuccessful.
They're not doing that now.
They're not doing that now.
Wow.
Also, eliminate the 10-second backcourt rule.
I don't know what that would accomplish.
I don't know what it accomplishes either. There's also some adherence to FIBA rules that college is not using, which I'm all for.
The ball in the cylinder, yeah.
Yeah, I'm all for FIBA rules being the same as college rules. And they also wanted to, or at least are kicking around the idea of a modified 6-foul rule with the following provisions.
Joe, I don't know if you can do this successfully. Go ahead. Let's see.
All right.
I almost feel like we should get like a random person off the street to listen to this
and see if they understand
and see
it.
If they have any idea of what you just said.
So, all right. So this is adopt a modified 6-foul rule with the following provisions. Remember, in college basketball, if you get 5 fouls, you foul out. 1, a player may not commit more than 3 personal/technical fouls in any 1/2. Penalty disqualification. That would be one of the provisions. One of them would be a player may commit 3 personal/technical fouls in the first half and 3 in the second half. In this case, the player is allowed 6 fouls before being disqualified. This would eliminate a situation where somebody gets their second foul and they immediately come off the court in the first half. We see that all the time. A player may commit 0 or 1 personal technical foul in the first half and will be disqualified on the player's 4th personal technical foul in the second half. So not 6. So you committed 1 in the first half, and because you did that, you only get 4 more. Right, I know you're cringing right now. It doesn't have to be that complicated. Why don't you just give him 6 fouls? Give him 6 fouls. What's wrong? Why can't you do that? That seems like a simple solution, right? Maybe not. So anyway, now that I'm in my car and listening to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin, I almost drove off the road because Keyshawn continues to put Sam Darnold, quarterback now with the Carolina Panthers, former Jet, in a position that I don't quite understand. Like, if you believe that Sam Darnold's got potential, fine. I've been very upfront that I am not exactly – I am tepid on the move for the Carolina Panthers. I believe that the Carolina Panthers will be right back in this position next season looking for a quarterback because Sam Darnold's not going to be the guy. But not if you ask Keyshawn Johnson.
No.
Oh, my goodness. Keyshawn Johnson on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin today posed this bizarre hypothetical related to Sam Darnold.
I think when you look at intriguing, you got to look at teams that made some moves in the offseason, starting with the Carolina Panthers. They took what the Jets didn't want in Sam Darnold. You get Sam Darnold paired with Robbie Anderson and some of the talent that they have over there, a healthy Christian McCaffrey back, a defense that's solid and sound, and a young coach who knows what to do from an offensive standpoint. I think you're going to see the number 3 pick that the Jets selected in Sam Darnold thrive. What if the Carolina Panthers are playing in the NFC Championship game? How would the Jet fans feel then?
What? I'm not fully expecting the Carolina Panthers to make the NFC Championship game just because they got Sam Darnold, but these are the fever dreams that Keyshawn Johnson has about Sam Darnold.
I've been trying to tell you that he has some sort of unhealthy fascination with him. Either that or he's like the most generous grader of all time.
Maybe there's that. That's entirely possible.
Because of the USC thing, because of the Jets thing. And I get it. Like, you know, you want to see your guys come up, man. You want to see them rep.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure the 50 turnovers and 39 starts suggests. My favorite part of that actually was, you know, weapons like Robbie Anderson. Literally the only good player he ever played with the Jets was Robbie Anderson. Mm-hmm.
Getting Christian McCaffrey back, I get all of that. But I'm confused. I thought Christian McCaffrey was a liability now because of that contract. I thought we shouldn't believe in running backs and those types of things. I have to get my discourse correct. Look,
playing with weapons. What does he say? Give it to me again.
Yeah, man. I got to hear that one.
With weapons like Robbie Anderson.
Speaking, you got to look at teams that made some moves in the offseason, starting with the Carolina Panthers. They took what the Jets didn't want. In Sam Darnold. You get Sam Darnold paired with Robbie Anderson and some of the talent that they have over there. A healthy Christian McCaffrey back, a defense that's solid and sound, and a young coach who knows what to do from an offensive standpoint.
Do we know that
I think
yet?
You're going to see the number 3 pick that the Jets selected in Sam Darnold thrive.
Look, we don't know that yet about Joe Brady as offensive coordinator of the Carolina Panthers. We don't know that yet about Matt Rhule. There's some assumptions that these guys are going to be breaking the mold and turning things around. I I love that they believe in themselves. I mean, you have to, but it. My issue comes back to a real simple thing. For every excuse you can make about Sam Darnold not working out with the Jets, right? It's the Jets. He had mono. It's Adam Gase. Those are all valid reasons.
Sure.
But we could also make a similar argument about why things didn't necessarily work out with Teddy Bridgewater in the first season with the Carolina Panthers.
And I'd argue, what didn't work out with Teddy Bridgewater? I get it. He didn't play well at the end of games. I understand that. Well, that does fall on the quarterback. Don't get me wrong.
But I can also point out that there was an over-reliance on Christian McCaffrey, and the offense didn't start to cook until he went out with injury. And you're like, all these quote-unquote weapons that we talk about, were we ever going to find out these weapons if Christian McCaffrey never gets hurt?
And this is your favorite topic, too, Joe Brady. How much of the end game execution do you put on the quarterback? How much do you put it on the play caller? It shares both ways.
There was, right? Clock management issues. Some of that was on Teddy Bridgewater. Some of that was on the coaching staff. There was a weird reliance on deciding to go for it on fourth down. Or a 70-yard field goal. Or, oh, you decided to do a fake punt here? That's
right.
Interesting.
There was a couple of those.
Those are coaching decisions, okay? That's not necessarily on Teddy Bridgewater. But if we're willing to make these excuses for Sam Darnold and why you believe he's got potential upside, what is it about Teddy Bridgewater that you don't give that benefit of the doubt to? Is it because he's played longer? We saw he's been in the league longer. He's come back from injury. We saw he was capable of winning five games in a row with the New Orleans Saints. Fine. But let's talk about how this played out for the Panthers in a pandemic. You bring in a new coaching staff with a rookie offensive coordinator, a guy who just gets there with a new cast of characters with no actual real train. Like, there was no camp. It was all virtual.
Yeah, no.
Everybody was figuring it out on the fly. And all things considered, he played pretty damn well.
When he was healthy. Oh.
So are you to tell me that Teddy Bridgewater wouldn't get more of the principles that you're trying to teach with a full off season, with an actual training camp? So this is the thing that ultimately bothers me. We make assumptions about Teddy Bridgewater in the same way that we make assumptions about Sam Darnold. If you wanted to tell me that one thing that Sam Darnold can do that Teddy Bridgewater can't do is throw the ball down the field. I know they can all throw it down the field, but Sam Darnold's an actual deep threat, something that Teddy Bridgewater didn't necessarily have in his repertoire. Okay, I'm here to listen to you. But what's the caveat? What's the yin and the yang to Sam Darnold and his cannon arm? He threw a lot of interceptions.
Takes more chances.
Threw a lot of interceptions. And are you telling me that he's going to make all these sound decisions in the red zone? I'm not quite so sure of that. It's a huge risk, and I do think that the Carolina Panthers are going to find themselves in this position next year, looking at another quarterback.
Can I ask you a serious question?
Aren't they all serious questions?
No, but this one is serious.
Okay.
When's the last time someone referred to you as young?
Every time I get ID'd at Wegmans. Doesn't that make you feel young?
No.
I get ID'd at
Wegmans. Yeah, you have to. They make you show your...
But it makes me feel young. I'm like, so the guy with the gray in his beard, you think he's not over 21? All right, gotcha. That makes me feel good.
Keyshawn just referred to Matt Rhule, who's my age.
Yeah.
Class of 93. Yeah. He's young.
Well, young is relative.
But he's not young. Like, no. As long as Sean McVay is running around in diapers in the NFL, Matt Rhule's not young. He's a middle-aged person. That's what I am.
When I know what you were saying. When I hear people refer to somebody like Matt Rhule as young, I take that to mean...
Heck, how old's Joe Brady?
Joe Brady's 30.
He's like 20.
No, Joe Brady's like Rand's age. He's like 33,
He's younger
right?
than Rand.
He's 30.
Rand's like his dad.
Makes me feel good about that.
How old is Joe Brady? He's
like 31.
31, okay.
No way.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so how could Matt Rhule be young? He's 15 years older.
When I know what you're saying, literally that makes no sense.
Right.
Literally it makes no sense.
Yes.
Figuratively, though,
okay,
Matt Rhule is
compared
young.
To Belichick.
No, he's young
compared
in the
to
NFL.
Riverboat Ron.
He's young. He's new. He's a rookie. Mm. He just got here. He's not a crusty old vet. So when I hear somebody say young in that regard, that's how I take it. And Wes Durham's hanging out. He's in the country. He's in spring football mode. Wes, what's up, man?
Sitting there talking to Rand about some very important things, and you guys interrupt me by bringing me on the air. How you doing?
What were you guys talking about?
Rand, we were talking about how Giglio's mad at me.
Yeah, let's just go ahead and
get
to this.
Not true.
Yeah, all right, Giglio, what's your issue with Wes right now?
I just have one question for Wes. Do you like me?
Absolutely.
Oh.
You're one of my favorite people from Jersey outside of Chris Majewski, my best friend from high school. Who lives at Topsail Island and might be listening, or his brother might be listening, who runs a printing company in the Triangle. So shout out to Jeff Majewski.
So let's set a Majewski line standard, if you will.
All right.
If Majewski was covering NC State and you had information about NC State, would you share that information with him?
Nope.
No. Okay, no, that makes me feel better then. That does. That was my only question. We're square. You and I, we're square.
Yeah, you and I are good. We're going to play golf here sometime in the summer. It's going to be
absolutely
fantastic.
But you're breaking news on the ACC network about NC State and Dave Doran's contract.
I was.
And that whole
thing.
So was
Gary Hahn, apparently.
And Gary Hahn was on the pregame radio show. Mm-hmm. And right. I'm sitting here going, wow, man, I'm really slipping. My fastball is really hittable these days. Wow.
Yeah, you bet when Edward R. Murrow Durham is just cranking it out right there on the old ACC Network spring game.
But that totally made sense to me from NC State's perspective. You're basically doing a commercial about their football program. You should know that information. You should be sharing it with people.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, and you guys know how I feel about the job Dave's done. I've been pretty candid on this show about it, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the patience factor had to be endured. As State fans, it was probably very uncomfortable the first couple of years. But I, you know, look, I'm thrilled for him and his staff. I'm thrilled for NC State that they're investing in the resources that it takes to be competitive in this deal. But yeah, when we got word about it, Roddy and I talked about it, and I said, hey, look, we'll get this in the first half, and that's what we did. So I'm thrilled for them, and I had no idea the news cycle in the Triangle was being directed through Gary Hahn and me on a spring game.
Just movers and shakers, man. We just take our cues from you, Wes. Although, having processed that information.
Can I just say real quick, though, by the way?
Yeah.
I was thrilled you and your dad got to have a beer last night at Trophy Brewing.
Yeah, that was
Can I just say that's one of the cool things about coming out of the pandemic,
yeah,
with vaccinations and everything else. The reunion with people. And you guys know that we live 2 miles away from my in-laws, John and Nancy Newman, wonderful people.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been able to kind of, now, because we had COVID, that's why we're able to do this. We have the vaccine the hard way, as my doctor told me.
Yeah.
You know, they've been vaccinated. They're doing great. I mean, but the reunion and being around people again is just, it's so refreshing, to be honest with you.
It is. Yeah, yesterday was my mom's 66th birthday. So we went to Trophy. That's where she wanted to go. That's where she wanted to go.
Joe, I'm calling BS on that.
No, actually, Brand, I can call
Jillio,
my
not you. I'm talking to Jillio that your mom called. Hey, I want to go to Trophy Brewing and sling brews with your dad and your.
Well, son. My mom loves their margarita. Actually,
as long as I'm not offering theories about communism, she's fine.
Yeah, she has no time for Jillio on that. She doesn't.
Great.
She has zero time for that.
Great.
No, but it was my mom's birthday yesterday, and she was cool with going to Trophy. She likes their pizza. They've got the
that pizza's good. We had pizza the night we went.
That's right. Long time ago. Anyway, yeah. So my dad is the type of person who will have a jersey for everything, okay? If you were to go to an NC State baseball game, he will show up in Miami Hurricanes baseball gear.
Yeah.
I've gone to the Durham Bulls Athletic Park. For some reason, he doesn't have Bulls gear, which I guess I have to need to hook him up with Bulls gear.
Yeah,
but he'll show up decked out in Cardinals gear.
Wow. Straight,
like, he'll show up. You know our friend Jonathan Jones, who likes to tweet
yeah.
out
oh, yeah,
inappropriate jerseys? Like, why
sure.
are you wearing this to this game?
That's your
yeah.
dad.
That's my dad. Every yeah. single time. So I had a bet with Kelly. I said, how much do you want to bet that my dad shows up to Trophy like it was a home game wearing yep. the Trophy sweater I got for him for Christmas, or this beer shirt that he has from them? And sure enough, he showed up in that freaking Trophy sweater, and I was dying laughing at the entire thing.
But your wife was much too smart to take that wager.
Yeah, she didn't take that wager. She didn't take that wager.
No, she knows.
Yeah, she knows a lot better than that. So that's why we ended up there. Yeah, it has been cool. My parents have been vaccinated for a while now, and I think as of today, it's been the full 2 weeks since we got vaccinated. And you're right, things are kind of getting back to normal-ish, which gets back to normal-ish conversations about coaches and contracts and things like that.
Yeah.
Related to Dave Doran specifically.
Okay.
I saw the news, and on the surface, Dave Doran gets contract extension, and I could see some of the knee-jerk reaction going, well, what did he do to deserve a contract extension? Except when you get to the nitty-gritty, it's just an extension, at least my understanding is, it's an extension of the deal that exists. I know, Jillio, you brought up Boo Corrigan likes contracts a different way than Debbie Yao, the previous AD, liked her contract with a bunch of bonuses. This just seemed like a natural extension of what's already going on and not any sort of indication of the future of the program or whatever. I mean, it also helps with recruiting, too. You don't have to talk about, well, why is your contract only out through 2023? Now they say, well, my contract's out through 2025. Like, this seems like a nothing burger to me in terms of what it means for Dave Doran.
Well, yes and no. Okay. From a structure standpoint, you might be right. From an investment standpoint in the football program, I would disagree and pivot to another angle altogether.
All right.
Because he also did something to help his staff.
Yes.
And you guys can say what you want to say, and we may have a long discussion about this. This is the best staff he's had.
I'm not going to disagree with you on that, by the way.
Okay. Now, third part of this, and the one that I think really is important, if you don't believe it's important, watch what happens in the next 6 months. They've invested in off-the-field resources to help the football program from a support standpoint. That support standpoint can be gauged a couple different ways. Is it recruiting-based? Is it graphics? Is it online? Is there whatever? All that stuff at this point has become, look, I had a coach tell me at the FCS level that the stuff that goes on right now from an internet, online, you know, function is as important at their level, FCS, as the day-to-day stuff they do from a recruiting standpoint with calls and texts and emails and whatever else they're sending. I just think you got to understand that football is a comprehensive product. Dave certainly understands that. His staff is outstanding. And I think now the off-the-field resources and support structure he has is as good as it's ever been. And that's, I think, why Roddy and I were talking last Saturday about how important we think that is for where NC State's ultimately going and how encouraged you got to be about where their future is right now.
What did you see on Saturday from the spring game?
Well, I think it's hard to gauge without the, you know, the frontline guys they had didn't have. Knight, Person, we didn't get to see Emeka Emezi. Some of the guys on defense, Drake Thomas, Peyton Wilson in particular. Tanner Engel still brings it in the spring game, which I liked. You know, I think that you got to be encouraged about where they are from a competitive depth standpoint at about six or seven positions. They're going to have three, four legit running backs. They're going to have seven wide receivers.
Okay.
They're going to have seven offensive linemen, eight offensive linemen I think they're very comfortable with. They're younger guys who they talked about with older guys not playing that I think helped themselves. Defensively, I think they're going to have in the secondary, let's put it this way. Let's assume Corey Durden transfers in as he's supposed to, the defensive lineman at Florida State. Cyrus Fagan's already in, right? Derek Pitts is already in. You're now talking about legitimate six, seven, eight guys in the secondary, six, seven guys up front, five, six, seven linebackers. Joe, I don't know they've ever had that. I just don't know that they've ever had that kind of inventory. And as Pac said the other day, and I agree with it, it now comes down to you've shown me this, you've done this, you won eight last year, now can you go do the dirty deed? And realistically, I'll be honest with you, today on April the what, 13th, 14th?
14th.
I'm not going to invest all my eggs on what happens against Clemson because I still think they're capable of having a really, really good year regardless of what happens that game. So if I'm an NC State fan, I'm more concerned about Starkville before Clemson, and I'm more concerned about those games that Roddy was talking about where they play, I think, four out of five on the road against really good teams in the ACC. Look, I have no problem telling you this. I like Clemson to win it. I think Carolina's going to be the favorite on the coastal side, and I have no problem if I were picking them one through five right now. I have no problem putting NC State behind Carolina in third.
About Carolina, I feel like we should transition there. I'm sure there are some Carolina fans wondering, why the hell are you spending all this time talking about NC State? Carolina's going to be the, you know, is going to be the team that gets
all
the –
We got our spring game coming up over here, Joe.
That's right. Thank you, Mac. Yeah. Yeah. And all the focus is going to be on Sam Howell.
And it should be.
Absolutely should. I've already started the campaign. If you're an NFL team, you want to be foul for Howell. You like that? You like that, Wes?
Yeah, put it on a sticker.
I might hashtag it.
Yeah.
Foul for Howell.
F-O-U or W? Chicken for Howell?
No, no. You don't,
steak,
you know,
for Howell?
No, you don't want to, you know, you want to do that. Okay. You don't want to do that. Surf and turf for Howell. No, we don't want to do that. But I guess the question is, how much do you buy into, because you got to remember the last time we saw Carolina play was in a bowl game without all the offensive weapons that Sam Howell typically sees.
Correct.
But you saw other guys step up, right? And a lot of people were excited about Downs at wide receiver. Like, everything's going to be fine, right? Mm-hmm. So do you buy into the depth that they were kind of flexing in a loss in a bowl game to go into this season?
I mean, from the standpoint of guys who may have an opportunity, sure, to contribute.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, look, and I'm not going to speak for Jay Bateman because the guy does a great job. I want to see it happen. I want to see the defense take the next step. You know, the thing I looked at, we talked to Mike Norvell last week ahead of their game. They bring 19 starters back. Yeah, but one of them is not the quarterback, okay? And you may bring 19 starters back, but you got to show me you can still run the ball. Carolina's got to show me you can get people stopped. They're also, in this particular directive, going to have to show me that they can get vertical like they used to, right? I mean, let's be honest. Josh Downs, yeah, I'd be encouraged. I want to see him run the ball. I want to see kind of what that looks like. That's why their spring game's important to me, in all honesty. I know Sam Howell can sling it. He doesn't have to take a spring game snap from me. Now, that's not realistic, but there's still some questions about Carolina. But if you can answer at least some of the unknowns in the spring, then I think you got every right in the world to think that they can win the Coastal.
Wes Durham, ACC Network, joining us here on the OG. That's Joe Ovius. I'm Joe Giglio. Wes, one of the great things about the pandemic, and I say that in a great way,
as you guys move back into the big studio today,
was flexibility in college sports, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So Mac Brown earlier this week was talking about how the decision to, you know, the extra year of eligibility, the transfer issue now, has created basically a squeeze on the class of 22 in roster spots.
No doubt.
And I'm wondering, because some people are confused by this, Wes, so I'm just going to reset it for everyone. Seniors weren't the only ones given an extra year of eligibility. Everybody was given an extra year of eligibility.
That's right.
So this will continue 3 and 4 years down the line, and Mac was specifically talking about the class of 22, but you can apply the same issues to 23 and 24 because the one-time transfer rule isn't just for this summer either. It means during your college career, you're allowed one time to transfer without any sort of penalty. So I'm wondering if you think the NCAA will be flexible and say, sheesh, that wasn't a good thing we did. Or is this like trying to turn the Titanic around and it won't be done?
Well, first of all, we're talking about an organization that's as inconsistent as anything we've ever seen, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's pocket that portion of the program. The second thing you have to remember, I believe, about this is you got to – Tom Luganville talks about this better than anybody else, okay, because it goes back to counters and non-counters, right, with this extra year, this invisible waiver that's out there that allows everybody a swing on the house. At some point, the financials catch up to it depending on the way you go about it. So – a football coach, and again, I think a coach can speak to this far better than I can. You have to measure your 85, but you can't sacrifice with the recruiting process, the building of your program. Do I think the NCAA will do anything? Absolutely not. Mm. I don't think the NCAA is in a position to add, subtract, or do anything. They've already done enough damage to the model by doing this for 1 year. Look at basketball. Look at what basketball's become. I mean, you know, and how many football – we've had over 1,000 football players in the portal, Giglio. That's the number I was told was like 850.
Yeah, something
crazy.
Like that.
It's bananas. So why would the NCAA go back in and now kind of take the eraser around the edges of the whole equation, well, right?
Not this year. What I was thinking was next offseason they could – take the input from coaches like Mac Brown and from other administrators and say, you had the best intentions for this extra year. And basically what they did was they froze the eligibility clock for everybody. They had their best intentions, but, you know, this is the classic case of unintended consequences.
Yeah, and Tony Grimes came to school because they weren't playing in Virginia, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Will Shipley shows up at Clemson early because they didn't play in North Carolina in the fall. To me, I'm not sure the NCAA the coaches want something. They want to be able to balance the recruiting class for the high school kid, because the junior class, last year's junior class, is the one most impacted by the waiver, according to Luganville, in the football paradigm, right? I can't speak to basketball if that's the case. But Tom has told me, based on the counter, non-counter, and the extra year, that junior class, the ones that were supposed to be juniors last year and are seniors this year, see, they didn't stop the football clock in high school because nobody wants to do the 11th grade again and take Miss Frobisher's algebra class or whatever.
Hell no.
The case may be.
In my case, it would have been Sister Janet's. No, thank you.
At Apex High School, let's see, it would have been maybe World Civ with Mr. Glenn Denning. I'm not sure. But the idea of it is, Gilio, to your point, and this is what Mac is talking about, he knows that junior class is in peril, right? They all
right.
do. But they also have to then say, oh, well, crap. Okay, well, then what if we're going to give somebody like Skalski, James Skalski at Clemson, who the first game he played as a Clemson Tiger, Jeremiah Trotter Jr., who might be playing behind Skalski this year, was 13 years old, okay? That part of this is a reality for some. There's the kid at State who's going to play the seventh year.
Yeah, Riley.
I mean, mm-hmm. Yeah, Riley. I mean,
Tyrone Riley.
Yeah, they all know, these coaches all know where that class is going to be most impacted by this, and that's why they, you know, maybe saying, hey, wait a second, do we want to do this? To me, I'll be honest with you, from the time Luganville told me about this, I thought this was just another example of the NCAA cutting their own throat a little bit. Because handing out the free waiver has done nothing but complicate the process of what? Kids getting a chance to play major college sports or college sports in any respect.
In the defense of the NCAA, we didn't know how long this was going to last, what it was going to look like. Again, it's best intentions having some consequences that we
might
not have
thought
of.
But did you have to give – okay, I understand last spring.
Yeah.
Okay?
You didn't have to do it for football.
Or basketball.
No.
Or basketball. And you know what? Now we got to declare whether somebody's a super senior, if they're an ultra aluminum senior, if they're whatever. I mean,
no, we do plus now. Plus.
Senior plus.
Like Disney plus, ESPN plus. Everything's a plus.
Oh, Annabelle Myers, who you were talking with last week in the run-up to the NC State spring game.
Yeah.
Like, she was trying to explain to me how they're going to start labeling even, like, freshmen. And Thayer Thomas. They have Thayer Thomas as a graduate fourth-year junior or something like that.
What?
I'm like, what?
Yeah.
It's like diamond grades?
Yes.
Yeah.
Jeez.
I mean,
okay.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
We got to go to the old Thomas Jefferson first year, second year, third year.
No, we're going
to
do it on the clarity scale. Is like you buy rocks.
You know, VVS. What's the color scale of this thing?
Right. So, I mean, I get the issue, but I won't disagree with Coach Brown on this. He knows the product line better than I do, but still, there would be a concern that I would have that you got to stop the momentum of the freebie. How do you do that? I don't think the NCAA is capable. I think this has to be decided in let's say football, the AFCA, and the D1 Council. That would be about as far as I get trusting. Let's put it that way.
Wes Durham, ACC Network, joining us here on the OG. Alongside Joe Giglio, I'm Joe Ovius. All right, let's transition to guys we know are going pro, okay?
Sure.
To the NFL. And look, maybe I'm not the best person to be discussing this because I can't do NFL draft stuff every day. I'm just not mentally capable of doing it because nothing has changed, right?
I got you.
But that's not the business we chose. And every time I turn on ESPN, there's some new wrinkle on which quarterback should go. So I have two particular items that I find fascinating.
Try.
Are we so bored with other sports that we have to create a conversation that Zach Wilson would be a better prospect or a better pro than Trevor Lawrence, and that maybe it's not so sure that Trevor Lawrence is going to be the overall number one pick in the draft? So that would be issue number one. And then issue number two, and we asked Mike Greenberg about this on ESPN, because I watch Get Up on ESPN every morning, and Greenberg's having a draft conversation every day, and every analyst they bring on likes Justin Fields from Ohio State. And yet, Justin Fields could potentially fall to the Carolina Panthers at eighth, which would be, I mean, if you're the Panthers, you take him at that spot. But still, I don't believe for a second that somebody would take, who's the guy from North Dakota State? I forgot the guy's name.
Trey Lance.
I don't believe for a second that a front office would not take Justin Fields and go for somebody like Trey Lance. I don't buy it. What is going on? What am I missing here?
Well, first of all, let me go to the last week's conversation about Dan Orlovsky and Kirk Herbstreit.
Okay? Oh, okay, yeah.
Because Orlovsky reports one thing. Herbstreit, you know, kind of goes back, and he's an Ohio State guy. And I'm not demeaning either guy, and I'm not going to say either guy was right or wrong, okay? But at some point, the interior of the deal has to be determined. And the interior of the deal will ultimately decide. Somebody is snowballing or throwing up a smoke screen.
Yes.
Okay? Who's putting up that smoke screen is debatable. Look, Lawrence is going to be number one to Jacksonville. That's just the way this is going to go down. Okay? After that, I got to be honest with you. I think Zach Wilson's going to go to the Jets. I think it's the reason they traded Sam Darnold. Now, were the Jets' mind changed today? Maybe. I mean, maybe it was. The only reason Justin Fields had another pro day today is because somebody somewhere along the way felt like he didn't do everything he needed to do the first time.
Only the Jets West could be swayed by a pro day, by the way.
Well, there's no doubt about that. I mean, the Jets, if you're trying to predict this deal, then go with the bizarre of, you know, the whole
sure.
deal that's bizarre.
Not his first pro day. It's the second pro day that really got me.
It got me. I'm Joe Douglas. Isn't that the GM now of the Jets? That guy, I mean, he'll be, you know, on the curb hawking the post here if he does something crazy. But I to me, obvious, here's what I'm going to go with. I think Zach Wilson is a fit for what they want to do in New York.
Okay, fine.
Okay, so then go Zach Wilson. Now, everybody asked me, are the Falcons going to take Matt Ryan's successor at 4? The answer to that, in my opinion, is no. If the Falcons take Matt Ryan's successor, it's going to be because they traded down. Because Matt Ryan's going to be the quarterback financially for the next 2 years in Atlanta. It makes no sense financially. You're cutting your throat again if you get rid of Matt Ryan before 2 more years. It just it doesn't do anything. It keeps you in salary cap hell, which Atlanta is trying to get out of daily. Here's the other thing, too, and it was written about by Tory McElhaney in The Athletic. Atlanta kind of controls the draft at 4.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they don't take the quarterback or they trade down, and honestly, that's what I think they should
they
do.
Should, I think they should do that, too.
If they don't, they revolutionize the game. They take Kyle Pitts. He is the best available player, which Terry Fontenot, the new GM, has said is his draft philosophy. Best player available where you select.
Okay, well, Kyle Pitts would make sense at that spot. Wes Durham, ACC Network, we appreciate the time. We'll have to talk a little bit more draft next week.
No, come on.
No, I think we're getting closer to it. I have no problems talking about the draft once we actually get into the realm of the draft. My goodness.
I think Javonte Williams and Michael Carter, by the way, have done some really good things. From what I understand.
Gillio asked Mac Brown last week if he's told any teams who they should pick first of the two.
Wow.
Yeah. You put Mac Brown on the spot.
I did. And of course, Mac, well prepared.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
What'd he say?
Whichever one fits your system best.
Nice.
I said, all right, when a
thanks,
GM
coach.
Asks you, which
appreciate
one's better?
You.
What do you
appreciate
say?
You.
Also,
appreciate
shout out to Mac Brown, who has taken the Roy Williams Shoe Drip Chronicles to his social media account.
God, no kidding.
Mac Brown posted some Jordans today that I was like, all right, even I will admit.
Yeah, better than your 574s?
Oh, stop it. Shout out to Boston College for signing with New Balance.
Wes will have a pair of Boston College edition New Balance before anyone.
I got a New Balance BC pullover we showed on the show yesterday.
Oh, nice.
We got
already?
A box. Oh, yeah, we got the box. It showed up here Monday afternoon for the announcement on Tuesday, Coach.
That's impressive.
Packer and Durham getting some gear now. I got to be honest with you. I'm wearing, like, some long-sleeve deal from Syracuse to work out in today. I got NC State football. I got Clemson.
You're like a coach.
I am Hard Rock Cafe. Love all, serve all.
Love it. Hey, man, and if you get some Boston College 574s in the Boston College colorway, man, send them my way. Size 13, I would appreciate that.
You don't wear a 13.
I do wear a 13, Wes.
A 5'4" guy wears a 13, Julia?
What? I'm not gold. I'm not 5'4".
I think you're conflating him with the previous host.
Yeah. Gold's like 5'4". I'm 5'10".
Oh!
5'11" if I'm wearing...
I think you're taller than me.
What's that?
I think you're taller than me.
I'm not
taller than
you. We're about the same size. Yeah. We're about the same size.
All right. Shout out to
you. Yeah,
your
so but I'm serious. I'm serious. If you get some 13s in those BC New Balance, man, you send them my way.
Why don't you just email Jason Baum?
All right, fine. I'll do that. Bye,
there
Wes.
Take care, boys.
I still like you too, Wes. Don't worry.
Let's open up the Heister Automotive Group hotline and say hello to Kyle Bailey, host the Clubhouse KB on WFNZ in Charlotte. Kyle, what's up, man?
I'm good. You did not tell me there would be trivia and games and prizes.
Oh, no, no, no. That's how we keep things moving, man. You got to hit people with that music trivia. It infuriates the audience because my goal is to make people in their cars yell, "How do you not know that song?" It gets me every time. Gets me every time.
You were going for people yelling "Talk Sports." Is that
not it? No. People know better when they listen to this show. Come on now. But speaking of sports, you and I recently had a conversation on your show about the trade for Sam Darnold and Teddy Bridgewater. And I was of the opinion that as of now, I mean, Teddy Bridgewater is a better quarterback than Sam Darnold. We're kind of banking on the upside of this. But I guess what I did not realize is that while I might feel a particular way about Teddy Bridgewater, it's abundantly clear the coaching staff does not feel this way about Teddy Bridgewater anymore. What has gone sour so quickly between the coaching staff and Teddy Bridgewater, and why it's pretty obvious they want to trade him?
Well, my listeners were mad at you for your no good, very terrible take. I didn't think it was all that outrageous. I mean, but the thing is, you were right in terms of, you know, statistically last year, who threw more touchdowns? But you also touched on it there a second ago that their dissatisfaction with Teddy really stems from his unwillingness to take shots down the field last year. You know, Teddy, you could point out multiple games last year where you could say Teddy was good, above average. He was fine. Also some bad games. But what really, I think, lingered was, you know, the repeated checkdowns, the refusal, it seemed at times, to take a deep shot when it was called for late in games. And as we know, Sam Darnold is certainly far from perfect, but he is the anti-Teddy in that way. This guy's going to push the ball down the field for better or worse. In fact, Jets coaches have said they tried to get him to check the ball down to the running back a bit more up in New York. So this coaching staff is clearly looking to make big plays, and they don't think Teddy can give them that.
Kyle Bailey joining us here on the OG. Kyle, are you on the Keyshawn Johnson train, though, that Sam Darnold could have the Panthers in the NFC Championship game this year?
Wow, that's quite a take, Joe.
That's what he said this morning.
He loves him some USC, Kyle. Loves him some USC.
He is in, that Trojan family matters to Keyshawn. Yeah. No, to answer your question, Joe, I'm not on that bandwagon. I do think, though, that this carries a lot of potential upside. And I said today that what needs fixing with Sam Darnold is the 6 inches between his ears. And really, that's it. He possesses all the abilities. He has the arm. He is mobile. He is young. He has lots of things on his side. But he's got to fix that. And until I see Sam Darnold stop giving the football away quite so much, no, I don't think I'm going to hop on Keyshawn's bandwagon.
Kyle Bailey, WFNZ in Charlotte. All right, so I don't buy the smokescreen around Justin Fields right now, the Ohio State quarterback. I don't know. There's something that's a disconnect for me in the way people are talking about him and the possibility that he could fall all the way to the Panthers potentially.
No.
If he does, though, hypothetically speaking, if he does, I mean, the Panthers have to like throw out whatever their draft plan was, right?
That is a good question, and one that I've been grappling with for days ever since the Darnold deal has come about. Because on the one hand, sure. You know, you think back to a couple of years ago, slightly different scenario, but what were we discussing then? Hey, the Browns have two picks in the top five. Shouldn't they just pick two quarterbacks to raise the chances they get it right?
Mm-hmm.
And again, not the identical scenario here, but you've traded for Darnold. It didn't cost you that much. And now you have the possibility of who I think is the second best quarterback in this draft potentially falling to eight. That is a very difficult decision. But I can't help but look at this and think that they've made a conscious, deliberate decision to be in the Sam Darnold business, at least for this season. And if you're going into the Sam Darnold business, then you need a left tackle because this organization hasn't had one since Jordan Gross. Quite literally, a different left tackle has started every season since Jordan Gross retired, and that's a bit of a problem in the NFL.
Kyle, is anyone in Charlotte clamoring for Marty Herney right now? Because you have to admit the one thing he did really well was take first-round picks.
You know, there's a little bit of irony there, right?
Yeah. Phone a friend.
I'm serious. Like, the one thing that guy could really do.
And then let him – don't let him near the other picks. Just
or
do
contracts.
That yeah.
Well, he's got to help Washington with that this year. But I haven't heard anyone clamoring. It's too soon. Now, maybe next year.
Right.
If they whiff on this one, we could get some bring back Marty Herney for the first round calls. But I don't know. I've not heard any clamoring from Marty just yet. I think everybody's very intrigued by Scott Fitterer based on both what he did in free agency, but also having worked under John Schneider in Seattle. And that's a guy in John Schneider who's, as you both know, just kept you know, swinging away, hacking away, trying to get his quarterback. They paid Matt Flynn a bunch of money. They still drafted Russell Wilson. It worked out. So Scott Fitterer had a front row seat to a lot of that. So I'm very, very interested to see how he handles his first draft.
Kyle Bailey, WFNZ out in Charlotte. Before we let you go, question, last question. How long was your haircut today?
Oh, 57 minutes.
Excuse me?
Yeah. 50. But I mean, when I say I go to a barbershop, Joe, I mean like a barbershop.
No,
like
I go to a barbershop too, but were you were in the chair for 57 minutes having your hair and beard worked on?
Yeah. Well, because like there was as much talking as there was cutting, probably more. So
no.
It's just that kind of place. And it drives my wife insane, but I love it.
57 minutes?
And that's why you love it.
Yeah, that's probably, that's
Joe,
probably.
Joe, what did I text you this morning? The man is an artist.
Okay.
I'm not gonna rush.
All right. I mean, like, how long
you
does
don't
he
rush
work?
Art, Joe.
How long is he? Like, look, I mean, shout out to my guy Steven over at Mr. Pompadour. One time I asked for a beard trim and he was like, I don't know, like working the greens at Pinehurst. I mean, he was just making sure that everything was lined up perfectly. And even I got like, yo, Steven, you know this is going to grow back within 24 hours. He's like, no. But you got to look good for that 24 hours. I'm like, that's fine. I totally understand that. But I don't know if I can sit in the chair for 57 minutes. I need like 30 minutes max. I got places to be, man.
Well, yeah, that's true. I hear you. I'm usually that kind of guy, too, but I decompressed there. But this man treats every haircut like he's trimming the hedges in Athens, you know, before a Georgia game. So, like, I appreciate that.
Kyle is Augusta National. That's what your lettuce and beard is. It's just it's got to be looking pristine. All right, man, we'll talk to you later.
Thank you, brother. Y'all be well.
So, a few weeks ago, or however, was it like a month ago? I don't even remember. We paired up.
Time is a flat circle.
It really is. We paired up with Jack Daniels and we did a contest called Make It Count. And we put the call out for listeners to submit their, essentially, a resume tape. Like, hey, you want to be on the radio? You want to hang out with us for an hour? Well, give us your best shot and give us some hot takes. Like this is for real. This is not just like a jokey thing. If you want to hang out in studio with us and do a little bit of a listener takeover, let's go. And we had plenty of submissions. And the one that caught my attention was the person who's in studio with us today, Will Hunt. Hi, Will.
What's up, fellas?
Thanks for listening to the show, number one.
Absolutely.
Number two, thanks for submitting your highlight reel, I guess. The reason why I gravitated towards your submission, Will, is because you actually treated it like you were teasing a segment coming up.
Yep.
It's almost like you want to do this.
Oh, it's been a dream since I was a kid, for sure.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yes.
So how old are you?
25.
Oh, geez. You're
since
right.
he was a kid.
Just
since
turned 25.
Since
April 3rd.
He was a kid.
Do you know who A-Rod is?
Yes. Yes. Only because of J-Lo, though.
See?
Yeah, see?
Right? I'm not going crazy. Like, there is a J-Lo thing.
Fair enough. So Will Hunt won this contest thanks to Jack Daniels, and he's hanging out with us in the studio right now. And part of the deal was you kind of get to talk about what you want to talk about. So I was curious. Now that you're here, you're behind the mic.
Yeah.
What do you want to talk about?
Well, I talked to y'all a little before this. You know, you kind of asked who my favorite teams were in the triangle. Started out with the Hurricanes. Huge hockey head. So one thing I want to start out was with the trade deadline that just happened.
Yeah, happened on Monday.
Yes. There's a lot of people on social media not happy about the Hayden Fleury trade.
Oh, see, you got caught up in Hayden Fleury hive.
Yeah. Well, I didn't get caught up.
There's a Hayden Fleury hive out there. People were very they saw his upside and they thought he was never used properly. If you're a fan of Hayden Fleury, then you should be happy for him.
Absolutely.
That he can go somewhere where that maybe his skill set will be utilized because it wasn't being utilized here.
No, I mean, and we were loaded up with talent for left-handed defensemen. Mm. Absolutely. So he didn't have a chance to really crack the lineup or get time to show his ability in an extended period of time. So happy for him that he gets a chance to do that, but also happy in return we get a guy who's not afraid to drop the gloves, get a little dirty. That'll help during playoff time.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see how that goes. It just, you know, people don't understand. They look, he was drafted, I think, what, 2014?
I don't have it in front of me, but he's a relatively young player.
Yeah, he is. But his production over the years, it just, you could not keep him for the production that he was putting out, even though in his defense, he didn't get that long period of time to show what he was capable of.
Yeah, also with Hayden Fleury, there is the possibility, and this is, I know that Don Waddell, the president and general manager of the Carolina Hurricanes, talked about this with Alec Campbell, who was filling in for Adam Gold this week. And he did allude to the fact that with another year remaining on Fleury's contract, they were worried about the expansion draft.
Yep.
Same. And I think I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, we don't want to, like, not get anything for somebody, just like magically just because of the way the expansion draft works. So they clear that off the books with, I guess, the intention of Hakanpa pans out, they might re-sign him because I think he only has, what, the remaining year left on his contract.
I think so,
I think that's the case. I don't have this stuff in front of me right now. Because I didn't realize you wanted to talk about the Canes.
They just wanted another Finn, Joe.
There is that. I guess Sebastian Aho did need another person to park their car at his house, another wayward Finn. But that's neither here nor there. All right, so the Canes lost in pretty deflating fashion to the Detroit Red Wings the last time we saw them play. They had the two-day break. A little soul-searching maybe on Tuesday and Wednesday before they are back in action tomorrow night?
Possibly. You know, looking back to the first, I believe, two games of the season, Detroit's who we opened the season against.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, I just don't know if the play styles don't mesh, if we just don't play well against them, their style of play with, you know, Bylsma and I think Blashill, the coach, is over there. So not real sure what's going on there. I'm sure Rod's talking to the boys. He's going to give them a real hard couple practices here the next couple days and hopefully come out tough tomorrow night.
Although, I don't know, Will. I mean, if you ask Gilio, I'm sorry, if you asked Gold and Alec, you know, coaching, not that big of a deal. I don't know what Rod Brind'Amour can do to get him turned around, right?
You know what, though?
I'm
Will,
kidding,
I wonder if they swerve. I wonder if Rod swerves and gives him a day off.
He could.
Just given the schedule. You know, sometimes when you anticipate, and he even said after the 3-1 loss on Monday, we were gross.
They were gross. Right? That was the quote.
So I wonder if he doesn't give it the old swerve, right? You come back, they practice today.
They practice
for
today.
For sure.
Yeah.
But then you say, oh, man, this is what they expect us to do. Maybe I'll do the opposite.
Yeah, maybe.
Maybe.
I do think there is something to be said about recharging and understanding the condensed schedule can wear you down. And this is another thing that Rod Brind'Amour has talked about, and I think it's worth repeating and worth exploring. He has said that he was surprised they haven't had more clunkers, right?
Yeah.
And maybe the clunkers are just reserved for the Detroit Red Wings. I don't know.
Seems to be the case.
Which that does seem to be the case.
As long as we don't meet them in the playoffs, I'm fine with that.
And there's no danger of that.
Exactly.
We're not good. That's not going to be an issue. I don't think anybody has to worry about Detroit in the playoffs. And this is something that Gilio and I have talked about. They went through a stretch that was essentially mimicking the playoffs, playing the best teams, not just in your division, but also in the conference, right? In Tampa and Florida. Florida's been a huge surprise. If you think the Canes have been a surprise in how they've been atop the division, the Florida Panthers are the biggest one in the division. So when you've been in these playoff-like battles between these two teams, it's not out of the realm of possibility that seeing Detroit on the other side ain't bringing the same intensity for you, and that's where you end up having a clunker. I think, Gilio, you've referenced this a couple times too. They're not going to be playing Tampa or Florida for the foreseeable future. They're going through the rest of the division right now. They got Nashville starting up. Actually, I'm going to be going to the game on Saturday. I'm actually going to go to my first sporting event post-vaccination on Saturday. So that should be a lot of fun. So it's not over, obviously, but they probably needed a recalibration of, hey, look, you just came out of these intense games. It's not over. You still got to bring it, and they're going to be bringing it to you. Nashville's been a team that has wanted to kind of muck it up a little bit, be physical. Now, that's another part of the conversation with the Canes that I find fascinating, because we talked to Mike Maniscalco, play-by-play of the Carolina Hurricanes the other day, and maybe this ties into the whole Hakanpa trade, a stay-at-home defenseman, a guy who doesn't mind being physical. It seems to be the Canes have developed this reputation of being a team that doesn't want to play physical, that doesn't want to hit. Maniscalco pushed back on that, saying, no, they'll hit you, they just don't want to play that way, which is understandable. Do you buy that argument?
Absolutely. I mean, if you've watched any games this year, this is the most physical Hurricanes team I've seen in the past at least 5 to 10 years, mm-hmm. without a doubt. And that includes, you know, the couple years ago we had Michael Ferland, you know, physical guy. But their style of play is dump the puck into the offensive zone, go after it, crash the net. It's not lay the body to get puck possession, but it's not lay the body to kill somebody.
Mm.
It's all the possession game with Brind'Amour.
Yeah.
It's time for Rant 2.
Acapella the news.
Well, boys, I had to talk about our guy Matt Rhule today because all the Sam Darnold news, I just wonder if Matt Rhule is actually just trying to do the players a favor if they, you know, are in the Jets. Is he just trying to be a good Samaritan taking people away? Didn't get Baby G on the track, by the way.
If I rule the league.
Little Nas, we'll see how that goes.
I free all the Jets.
hits.
It's not Drake, so I guess it's okay.
That all come play for me. If I rule the league. Hey, we got my guy Sam. Yeah, we pulled him away. We're gonna finally give him weapons and see how he plays. We'll surround him with Christian and Robbie and DJ. I mean, he's gotta be better, right? We'll hope and we'll pray. In the presser, you could see relief all over his face. Hey, you feel that way too if you play with Adam Gase. I'm sure that Salah will be a major upgrade, but the organization's not one I'd wanna have stayed. We feel like we're close, just needed a QB. And we know that Keyshawn's happy because he's from USC. We like players that fight and don't throw in the towel. Wonder if Sam could use a Baylor Bear or an owl. I know what you're thinking. What does all this mean for Teddy? Like, are we moving on? I'm not sure if we're ready. We know that he was only supposed to be a bridge, but he deserved some slack for last year, just a smidge. And now we gotta worry about the eighth pick. What if a QB falls? We gotta decide quick. We're hoping this season that we'll be on the prowl, but if not, I guess we can check up on Sam Howell. If I rule the league.
So yeah, if it doesn't work out this year, Panthers, Sam Howell's there waiting for you. No? No.
You've been listening to the Best of the OG with Ovius and Giglio podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting JOE to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 6 p.m., and you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.